Hello, Dr. Rebecca. By the way, these are trying times, and everybody's trying to keep the system going. And in fact, my BBC radio show has cancelled after 20 years because they're going into what the ABC does when times are bad, which is under their mandate, under the Constitutional Act that set up the ABC. So in bushfires or floods, the ABC swings into a different mode. And so here I am now in a slightly different mode with you guys, and I'm so happy to be here.
And we are so happy to have you here. Dr. Carl, I'm going to invite people to call and ask you questions, but I've got a bank of questions and comments and observations from people. We have I could answer calls and texts endlessly on COVID-19. So can we, at the same time as inviting people to call and ask Dr. Carl a question on anything, Dr. Carl, are you happy to talk to Susan in Kippering as well?
Bring on Dr. Susan, you're number one, and we love you slightly more than number two for the day because we're very shallow.
Susan, you have had family in Italy, or you have family there right now.
I have family there. They live there.
Okay, so tell us what's going on.
Okay, so just bear with me because I've never done this before, and I felt compelled to ring because people just aren't taking to me this whole thing very serious. Well, it's not seriously enough.
Yes.
So all of our family, sisters, brother-in-laws, nieces, nephews, great-nieces, everybody lives in the Brescia-Bergamo area, which is the absolute epicentre of COVID-19 virus outbreak at the moment over there. I just wanted to say that Italians, like Australians, probably don't follow rules very well. And in the beginning, they're a bit like we were here, weren't taking it seriously. Oh, you know, we have to go out and have our walks and all this type of thing. And I just wanted to say, we're not immune here to what has happened there, because they now are locked in their homes, terrified. Everybody's terrified of catching this. And I think people just need to look at other countries and what has happened here, there, and not think that it won't happen here. We get messages from them to say, stay at home. Stay at home. Go out as little as possible. And I just wish that message was getting through to the population of Australia.
Susan, it's got to be a tough time for you as well, having your family in Italy and seeing what's happening. I'm just looking at the latest figures in terms of Italy. The total cases now almost 75,000 people and 7,500 deaths.
Yes. And our niece was about to take her final exam to become a doctor. They told her and her classmates, don't. This was in the north in Bologna. Not too far from the epicentre. They told her, no, don't come because we don't have enough PPE for everybody, so don't come. Mm. Now, those same students, I mean, they were in their final, about to take their final exam, they've been called back to the hospitals to help because doctors are dying, medical staff are becoming infected. It is a frightening situation for them all, you know. Mm-hmm. And they send us messages, you know, like, learn from us. Stay at home. Do what you're told, you know.
Susan,
I don't know what else I can say to people.
I am glad you picked up the phone this morning, Susan. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Keep in touch, Susan at Kippering. Dr. Carl, we've had a pretty robust discussion about the restrictions so far, the confusion about the message that, you know, sort of a lift on haircut sends. I had the former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd on the program this morning saying, really similar to Susan Kippering, supporting a full shutdown. He also supports wage subsidies as have been enacted in the UK. Dr. Carl, we've also heard from Dr. Norman Swan this morning, who, well, didn't hold back. This is what he said.
To be blunt, we're dicking around. This epidemic could be under control in 4 to 6 weeks.
Where are you at on this, Dr. Carl?
I agree. I'll start off with a message of hope, okay? In 1 year's time, we'll all be looking back on this and saying, oh, you've got no idea how bad it was. We'll say to the kids and the grandkids and the nephews and nieces, you've got no how bad it idea was in 2020, we had to have instant coffee. And somebody would say, instant coffee, you were lucky, I had to get dirt and add water to it. And then that was, okay, so that's one side of it that most of us will get through. Now, the other side. Here's the hard statistics, and I'll give you the worst case, and I'll give you the best case. The worst case we have right now is Italy, where 10% are dying. That means 2.5 million dead Australians. That means if 10% of Australians die, and you have 100 people in your list of friends and family and acquaintances, that means that you'll go to 10 funerals by the end of this year. Right?
With not many people at that funeral.
10% of everybody you know dies. That's the worst case. Okay, that's the worst case. Mm. The best case, well, right now we're at 0.5%. And the curve is ramping up like crazy. But if we act now and act hard, following Norman Swan, we can keep it down low, not let it go too high. We don't want to have the situation that happened in Italy, where, for example, 95 people would turn up being really sick and needing a ventilator. Say 100 people turn up wanting a ventilator. They've only got 5 ventilators in the hospital. Okay? Straight away, 95 people die in 12 hours. The remaining 5, they probably get through. So we don't want to overload. We will all get infected sooner or later, but we want it to happen at a slow rate so we can go into the hospital system, be treated and come out again alive and keep the death rate down at 0.5% or better. Mm. At the moment, we're looking at 0.5%. So with today's death rate, each person has got a 50% chance of going to a funeral for a friend, family, or acquaintance in the next year. And we can even get it lower if we spend money on drugs and a vaccine. We haven't got there yet.
Yeah, but the vaccine, I was speaking to the director of infectious diseases at the Mater Hospital yesterday, just in terms of the vaccine. And he was saying, look, they're hopeful that in June they will start trials with a US approach and based on data from scientists here at UQ. But, you know, even after that, it's 12 months away. So in terms of this particular pandemic, this outbreak, the vaccine is not going to change things now. Can I just ask, though, Dr. Carl, so we've got you, you're a voice that a lot of people trust and listen to. Lots of support this morning for Dr. Norman Swan and even for the sentiment of, former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. Why is the shutdown approach not being adopted by the Chief Medical Officer of Australia? Why is that advice or conclusion different?
Two-part answer. Number one, I do not know. Okay, number two, here's an example. With regard to the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia, whenever they've been saying something to a federal minister in an application, in a document, they are not allowed to use the words climate change or global warming. They have been told by the secretary, the advisor to the minister, that nothing will get through. So it's being filtered before it even gets to the minister. Now, I don't know what's happening with the Australian situation. Maybe somebody has told the health officers, you can do anything you want, but you can't have a quarantine because I want to go out and meet 40,000 people at a football match and shake hands with every one of them. We do not know. The answer is we do not know why.
But there has been a call this morning from a group of, I'm not sure if it's doctors or scientists who said, well, I guess doctors are scientists, make the evidence public. Make the evidence on which you're basing
it. Yes, and then act on it.
Yeah.
Mm. I am optimistic that we will swing into action, that the better side of people will come through. If you look at wartime and disasters, the better things come through. So normally I'm walking down the street in Brisbane and there's Rebecca and she drops a wallet and normally I, Dr. Carl, would go, ha-ha, I have a wallet. But when times are bad, I say, excuse me, miss, you drop your wallet. So the better side, the altruistic side of people will come through. And hopefully, with our leaders, that will also come through and they will rise to the occasion and will do what have to be done. And we will keep the death rate in Australia to a bare minimum. We don't want the Italian situation. And that story from Susan, where her family, I mean, imagine what it's like. We're okay, right? But she is living, or her family is living in the middle of a situation where 1 in every 10 people is dead. Right, we're not going to have that in Australia if we come together and we work well together.
Dr. Carl Krusielnitsky, happy to answer your questions this morning. 1300 222 612 on anything you like. Who knows? Maybe you want to ask a question about oat and raisin cookies. Brendan, thank you for your text message. That was lovely. Dr. Carl, let's go to Debbie Kilroy, who was one of those people unlucky enough to have been diagnosed with COVID-19. Debbie was on the same flight as Peter Dutton, who also coincidentally was diagnosed with the virus. Debbie, how are you feeling this morning?
Oh, good morning. I'm feeling a lot better today, which is great. I have sort of come to the swings and roundabouts. So hopefully on the up and up.
Yeah. What day are you up to in the illness?
Well, from the first time I was tested up to day 13, but from the first day of symptoms up to day 17. So, yeah.
Day 17. Which was the worst day for you?
So the worst day within the 13 days of being tested was day 4 and day 8. They were really hard, yeah.
In what sense? What happened?
Can I ask, what sort of symptoms did you have? Was it you had a headache or pain?
Well, when I first started getting the symptoms, it was nauseousness. I was really nauseous. Then I started getting a light headache and body aches, and then a slight sore throat. And so when I landed back here in Australia from the US, I had all those symptoms, and then I just went directly from the airport to the hospital. But the nauseousness has been something that's just stayed the whole time.
I had no idea.
So, Deb, you were the first Queensland patient to be treated at home in isolation. Did you have to come back to hospital when you got sicker?
Yes. So what had happened was because we came directly to the hospital from the airport and we answered yes to the three questions. One, had you been in contact with someone that you know that's tested positive in the last 14 days? The answer to that was yes, Peter Dutton, because he's the only one that I knew that had been tested positive. Not saying that he gave us the virus, but that was the question. Second question was, have you been overseas? Yes, just landed 6 a.m. this morning. And third, do you have symptoms? Yes. So they said to self-isolate, and so that was on the Saturday. And then the following Friday, they told us to come to the hospital, so we had to... We got in the car and drove to the hospital and brought ourselves here.
So you're still in hospital now?
Yes. Yes. So, yeah.
I'm having a feeling of hope here that you've been through the worst of it and you're going to be one of the survivors. You're going to be alive.
I'm so happy. Really fearful for those that aren't going to survive, and that people are continuing to act like this is nothing, where it's actually very, very serious and we need to shut the country down now. The time has come for leadership to end this and just shut everything down so that this virus can end quicker, because the longer it's around and spreading, the more people are going to die. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my biggest concern is about people in prison, you know, like we know that in our prison system now in a number of jurisdictions around the country and, you know, because officers are walking in and out with symptoms and with the virus and passing it on. And, you know, I know women in prison who are elderly, who have respiratory issues, immune system, you know, health issues, they're at high risk of dying. You know, they're not in prison for a death sentence, and we actually need to get people out and look after them.
Debbie, keep getting better and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Deb Kilroy. Yeah, Dr. Carl, it is a relief. I mean, that's the other thing people ask to hear about in terms of figures. And you mentioned that figure of, you know, at the moment, 1 in 10 people who have tested positive for coronavirus are not making it through, those of the ones that they're testing. People also ask about those who've recovered. Did I say the wrong country then? In Italy, yes. People also ask about...
You didn't point out that in Italy...
In Italy, yes. Globally, there are, according to this pandemic chart that I'm looking at, 468,000 cases, 21,000 deaths, and 113,000 people have recovered. So it's a slow recovery rate before people are declared recovered, isn't it?
Yes, it's going to take time out of your life. We do not yet know so many things. We don't know if, after it's happened, whether you just go back to being normal or whether your lungs have got a little bit of permanent damage for the rest of your life, or maybe your foot, your little toe has got a problem. We are learning all of these things as we go along. But the main thing is we want to try and flatten the curve so that if you have to go to hospital, like Deb did, we can treat you. We don't want to have the situation in Italy where we just have to say, there's 100 of you, we've only got 5 ventilators. We don't want that situation.
And just in terms of information, we will get a little more information about Queensland. The Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk and the Education Minister Grace Grace will hold a press conference at 10:30 this morning. So we'll bring that to you live. But right now, Karen is in Griffin with a question for Dr. Carl about fruit. Morning, Karen.
Morning.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, what happens with things like pears, apples, lettuce, you know, all those sort of things? You know, because obviously people touch them. I mean, you do wash them, but I mean, do you wash them in vinegar and water? Or how do you do it? Or are you supposed to peel all the pears? I don't know. I mean, bananas and oranges and stuff like that are fine because, and you know, pumpkins because you've got the skin on and stuff and you just peel that off. I just don't know about the others and whether I should worry about it or if I should wash it, what do I wash it in?
Okay, look, I'll start off with a joke, which is totally irrelevant. So, hey, we've run out of toilet paper at our place, so we've had to use lettuce. Boy, that's the tip of the iceberg.
Ha-ha, boom, boom, terrible.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, now to the serious thing. At this stage, we don't know, Dr. Karen, so you're doing the right thing about thinking about it and saying, okay, if it's got a skin that I can remove, go with it. At this stage, we simply do not know. I'll be doing stuff on Triple J with both Norman Swan and Tegan Taylor, who are very clever people who know all this sort of stuff, and ring into Triple J and ask them. I do not know. If you're really worried with fruit, I would just cut off the outside coating. But remember, the virus doesn't come from nowhere. So if somebody comes in with into a fruit shop and then touches it, well, they've just touched it and they've got their normal skin germs, their normal bacteria and viruses. It's only if there's been the coronavirus. Now, here's the big unknown. Where is the coronavirus in our society? We don't know. I mean, you would have thought that if you share an aeroplane with Peter Dutton, that you wouldn't get it, but people did or are. And so, I think it's spreading from him. He must have been infectious at some stage. He must have infected a few people before he knew. So we're all, and that's not just him, it's everybody is at that risk. So being paranoid, maybe with fruit, just cut off the outer layer. What do you reckon, Dr. Rebecca?
Well, yesterday, Paul Griffin, the Director of Infectious Diseases at the Mater Hospital, said, worst case scenario, 72 hours this virus can live on certain surfaces, but it likes some surfaces better than others. And so it depends, you know, if it's metal or if it's paper or that kind of thing. Prudence, I guess, is where he seemed to land. So perhaps peel if you can. But, it is... in one respect, an incredible virus in terms of its ability to be transmitted and to stay alive for extended periods. And that's perhaps why so many people have become sick around the world.
Yes. Part of the difference between it and SARS is that SARS was infective after you had the symptoms. So there'd be somebody going, coffee, sneezy, blurty. And you go, okay, I'll keep away from them. But this one, with the proper name of SARS-CoV-2, it is infectious before you have the symptoms. Look, just think about this. In a couple of years, you'll be saying to the nieces and nephews, we had to drink instant coffee back in 2020. Most of us will come through, but with Susan and the 10% death rate in Italy, we're with clever thinking and following science. Science is going to get us through. We will not get through this just by giving discounts to alcohol shops and subsidies or by thoughts and prayers. Science is going to save our bacon on this one.
Thank you. Go ahead.
What's the best thing to wash things in generally in water? Is it water and vinegar? Or plain water?
Vinegar is not salty enough. Look, I don't know. I'd almost go for metho because methylated spirits is pretty pure. You've got 95% alcohol, 5% water, and a little bit of something else. The alcohol is known to break down the outer coating. Now, on the other hand, I actually tried this, and I tried that Surface something, Glen 20, whatever, and I sprayed a cup with it, and I drank it. I wiped it out, and then drank from the cup about a minute later, and I could still taste something yucky. Then I tried it with metho, and there was no taste. So I would try. Yeah, because it evaporates. The alcohol, 95% evaporates. The water, 5% evaporates. Now, the alcohol, if you wash your hands with metho, it's going to, you know, chop your hands up because it removes the fatty layer. That's part of the deal. You know, wear the gloves, all that sort of stuff. So I would go for alcohol in the short term, and then maybe for whatever the chief officer has said. Dr. Rebecca, what was the name of that officer who said something, the medical officer?
That was the director of infectious diseases at the Mater Hospital. I'm also just looking at an ABC online story now just about how to keep your home clean and free from coronavirus. And it says things like detergent and disinfectant are needed to clean surfaces, target high traffic areas like doorknobs, handles and benches. Non-porous items like takeaway containers can be wiped down with detergent or soapy water, and fresh produce should be washed. So that says washed in soapy water, Karen, but it doesn't say peel. So you'd think it would say peel it if they thought that was the best way to go forward.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Rosie's in Arana Hills, not thinking about surfaces but thinking about air. Good morning, Rosie.
Good morning, Rebecca. Hello, Dr. Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Go ahead, Rosie.
Hello, good morning. Go ahead, Doctor.
My question is the virus airborne? And I'm asking because my sister's doctor told her that it was in the air.
That is correct, but it has its highest concentration inside the lungs of a person who is infected, and then a lower concentration in the air around them as they speak, and then lower and lower the further away you get, until finally, maybe a metre and a half away, we don't know exactly yet, the concentration is so low that it's not enough to infect you.
Okay.
Now, what is the infective dose? In other words, how many do you need? Like, think about an antibiotic. You know, they say take half a gram and a hundredth of a gram is not going to make you better. You know, so there's an infective dose. We do know that there's one virus called norovirus, famous on cruise ships, that has an infective dose of 20 virus particles. That is astonishingly nasty. And there was a case in New Jersey where somebody at a wedding with a couple hundred people had norovirus, vomited on one corner of the room, they swept it up straight away, and on the other side of the room, 30 metres away, people got infected. What we're seeing is it's not that infective. So, is it in the air? Yes. Are there enough virus particles to infect you? Almost certainly not at this stage with the knowledge that we have. Like if you went, you know, into the middle of a park, and search really hard, you'd probably find one virus particle, but it's not enough to infect you. You need a whole bunch. We don't know how many yet.
Thank you, Rosie. Diane's also thinking about clean surfaces. Diane, good morning. What's your question for Dr. Carl?
Good morning, Beck. Good morning, Dr. Carl. I have a small container with a pine-smelling disinfectant in water that I use to wipe down surfaces regularly so I don't waste wipes everywhere. How long will the disinfectant stay disinfectant-y? Half an hour? So I don't want to keep throwing it out and getting new stuff if it stays disinfectant.
Oh, you mean the actual liquid?
Yes.
Do you mean the surface?
No, the liquid in the water, because I use a clean cloth and clean it down each time.
We need a chemist. I'm not that person, but so that's another question for next time. So, Rebecca, you're now doing the ABC going into the emergency bushfire flood mode. So if you get these little stockpile of questions, the expert who knows that answer is a chemist. My guess is it's probably good for days and days.
Oh, yeah, cause that's good. That's what I thought, but I'm only using it, transferring it every 12 hours, tossing it out every 12 hours.
All right. Well, Diane, I'll find out for you, and I will use the term disinfectanty in my question.
I thought you'd like it.
Yeah, I do like it. Thank you, Diane. Mary is in Redcliffe. Mary, good morning. What's your question for Dr. Carl?
Hello. What is it that kills people with coronavirus? When you die, what are you dying from?
Okay, Mary, this is a really deep question, and I'm going to say two words to you.
Yes.
Cytokine storm. And now I'll explain those words.
Yeah.
This is a bit of background. It's your own immune system that kills you. It's the luck of the draw. So I'll give you the example of hay fever. So in the season, the spring, the pollen goes everywhere in the air. Most of us go, oh, look, isn't it pretty? It's spring. The pollen doesn't bother us. It might be annoying on the car. But for a small percentage of the population, their immune system wrongly reacts. And they have a couple of days or weeks or months of sniffles, and then they're okay. Now, with both the flu and the coronavirus, your immune system wrongly reacts. We don't know how to find these people with our knowledge of human DNA yet. We will in 10 years, but right now we don't. And your immune system wrongly reacts, and it manufactures, out of the thousands of chemicals that it manufactures a bunch called cytokines, and you have so many of them, it's called a cytokine storm. And what these chemicals do is they cause generalized inflammation, and all your blood vessels get leaky, and you get inflammation of everything. The lungs, the kidneys, the liver, and you die of what, here's a technical term for you, multi-organ failure. And what kills you is your own immune system wrongly reacting. And in years to come, we will have the test where we can just look at your DNA and say, you are in trouble, you have to hide away, you, the person next to you, you're okay. We don't know yet how to do it. That's what does it.
My goodness. If more people knew about this, we would isolate.
Well, you know now,
well,
Mary.
That's part of the $1 billion that we should spend on trying to find a cure, which is the drug in the short term, and also finding which part of the immune system is the marker, so then we can make a test for that and isolate the people who are the ones who are really at risk of having the cytokine storm. That's where we need to spend the $1 billion.
Look after yourself, Mary, and you know, maybe that goes partway to explaining why some people can have COVID-19 and have zero symptoms. Dr. Carl, you keep well as well. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.